IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit boozallen.com/federalnewsradio.
Toxicology is a complicated field, to say the least. Analyzing chemicals to identify which ones are potentially harmful to humans and wildlife can be an arduous process. But over the last 30 years, Gary Ankley, a research toxicologist at the Environmental Protection Agency, has refined techniques to streamline it to help prevent dangerous chemicals from polluting America's waterways. His work has earned him a nomination in the Career Achievement category in this year's Samuel J. Heyman Service to America Medals. Federal News Radio's Eric White spoke with him to find out more.
There's thousands and thousands of chemicals out there, but we only have the resources to actually collect information, safety information, for a very small fraction of these, whether we're interested in wildlife and fish or humans. We're presented with the same challenge. We simply can't test everything. And so there's been a need to move to approaches where we can look at chemicals of concern and essentially make predictions without having a lot of testing information about their potential to adversely impact humans or the environment. And so what I've been involved in the last few years, and part of what this recognition is for, is the development of a concept called the adverse outcome pathway, where we can use this framework, this AOP framework, we call it, to help support predictive approaches so that we can look more efficiently at the potential effects of chemicals in a much more efficient fashion, in a much more rapid manner. So this is being driven by legislation here in the U.S. and Europe that really requires that toxicologists essentially generate more information quicker for more chemicals, even when we're facing fewer testing resources.
So it's basically, let me reset here. Gary Ankley is a research toxicologist with the Environmental Protection Agency, also a nominee for this year's Samuel J. Heyman Service to America Awards. And so what it sounds as if that when you collect information about chemicals now, you require at the beginning or at the forefront of collecting that information, you require researchers to take in more information about those chemicals so that you can make better predictions down the line and sort of speed up the research process? Or did I oversimplify it?
No, I think you captured part of it. In the past, in the field, we've depended pretty much solely on whole animal tests with rodents, for example, for human health assessments, or with fish if we're interested in ecological assessments, to determine the safety of chemicals. And so we'll run experiments that may take weeks or months to determine whether a chemical is safe. And this it's a good way to collect information, but it's very resource intensive and it takes a lot of time. So what we're trying to do is develop tools that enable us to shorten this time. And so when we ask for information about chemicals, we ask for different kinds of information that can be collected very quickly. And then we have approaches, including what we're working on with this framework, that enable us to take this information that can be collected within a day or even hours and translate that into what the consequences might be over the long term. So it helps reduce the amount of resources that we need to invest in these long-term tests, which enables us to look at more chemicals more quickly.
And what are the majority of the chemicals that you were testing back in your days of, you know, looking at problems of the Great Lakes? Were those mostly from pollution from agriculture runoff, or were they from, you know, people just putting them into the lakes, or was there some sort of industrial component there as well?
All of the above, essentially. The Great Lakes has been the repository for a pretty complex mixture of chemicals from agriculture, runoff, for example, of pesticides, from wastewater treatment plants. For example, one concern in the Great Lakes has been that we become more aware of are these chemicals of emerging concern. They're termed like things like pharmaceuticals that enter the system from wastewater treatment plants, and industrial inputs. Some of these industrial inputs are historical, going back into the 30s and 40s, and one that's been of a lot of concern in the Great Lakes are polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, that I'm sure many of you have heard of, as well as dioxins. And these are very toxic chemicals, potentially, and so there's a concern where these chemicals have essentially entered the environment. They're there because they last. They're very persistent. But we need to figure out what they might be doing in animals or humans, and where there are problems, we have to figure out the kinds of levels that we need to clean the system up to. So the ones that I've done probably the most work with for these historical contaminants are PCBs and dioxins.
Not to make you toot your own horn, so to speak, but you said that you've seen your research be included in legislation. Have you been able to see an effect over your career of, okay, well, now we're getting somewhere and we might actually know what the effect of these chemicals are, and we're starting to see that, you know, we're telling people don't, you know, these chemicals are, can affect humans in a negative fashion. Maybe we should be a little bit more careful of our disposal of them?
Yeah, I would think that one of the real success stories in the field involves PCBs in the Great Lakes. Initially, we weren't certain what these chemicals were doing, but through the development of methods to measure these and measure their effects in wildlife, primarily in birds and in fish, this ultimately resulted in a legislative ban of these chemicals, so PCBs aren't made or used in the U.S. anymore. And since that time, essentially the Great Lakes, relative to effects of PCBs, have seen quite a recovery. So, for example, eagles, which were one of the species that potentially was impacted by PCBs, have made quite a comeback. Another chemical that sort of fell in that class of impacting species in the Great Lakes was DDT, which I think many of you are familiar with, which was also banned. And so we have seen some excellent progress with regard to recovery in systems like the Great Lakes.
And I've also been reading about how you're seen as a well, you know, you've been there long enough, so obviously you have some people that you mentor at the agency or other researchers in your field. Can you discuss a little bit about what the sort of habits that you try to impose on them to get when they're, you know, researching these chemicals and, you know, taking in the approaches that you've discussed?
Sure. I would probably not use the word impose so much as inspire. But a big part of what you do in the field, particularly if you've been at it a while, is to mentor people. And the field of toxicology is a little different than most of the sciences because it's quite applied. We're working on specific problems, oftentimes dictated by laws, certainly dictated by societal desires. And so as we do our work, we have to first keep in mind what's the impact of this going to be, how's this going to be used, how's it going to help things. And in graduate school, most of the people that work in the field of science here go to graduate school. You aren't always taught that. You're taught basic science, you've been taught how to think about science, but you aren't always taught how you can use your science to make a difference. And so that's an important thing that we try to pass along as we mentor younger scientists in the field. You know, it's quite an honor being recognized in this way. Typically, toxicologists don't get a lot of recognition unless they mess something up. But it's even more of an honor because it actually reflects not just what I do, but it reflects the efforts of the many people that I work with. This isn't the kind of isn't the kind of task that you undertake just on your own. You have a team of people both on site for me and externally that contribute to these solving these problems, because they're big problems. They're not things that one person's going to address on their own.